Good evening. Thank you very much for asking me to be here this evening. All through the week, I've been seeing tweets and getting emails saying, well, I'm really looking forward to it, so no pressure. I'm not feeling any pressure at all. And as you may know, this is being recorded, so there's no extra added pressure there in any way, shape, or form. Some of you I know have seen me present before, and you're going to see some of the same slides. I'm not going to apologize for that, because I continue to use the same slides because the problems still continue to exist. And when these problems are solved, I'll get some new slides. But at the moment, that's where we are. This is just a very quick run-through of my work around the field. It's to prove that I'm actually a real person rather than Geppetto's sort of wooden puppet. About 10 years ago, a little bit more than 10 years ago, Professor Alma Harris and I were asked by the Specialist Schools and Academies Trust of Fond Memory to get involved in a project looking at how to engage parents to raise achievement. And that led to doing a couple of literature reviews. Have any of you done literature reviews as part of any of the work that you've done? Are they a joy and a wonder of things? Yes, I've now done five. I'm quite happy not to do any more, but, you know. But the second one of those, helping parents to support children, we did for the Save the Children Foundation. And if I go under a bus on the way home, which is highly unlikely because I'll be on the train, but if I do go under a bus, please can you just write Save the Children on my tombstone? Because I think we're prouder of that work, because on the back of that work, Save the Children put the FAST program into effect. We didn't say that you should use FAST. We said here are a number of things that you could do. And they put FAST into effect. And that's now benefited over 500,000 children, and it continues very strong, and I'm very pleased about that. I am by nature and by training a theologian, which is it's a circuitous route how I got here, but I am by nature and training a theologian, and one of the things we know is that family faith background can have an effect on children's achievement. And if you were undergraduates, I would now make you break up into groups and figure out why that might be, but I'm just going to gloss over it at the moment. But because of that, I've got a project running at the moment where I'm looking at parental engagement among Jewish families, because we know, at least in the States, that being born into a Jewish family means that you're going to get more out of education and you're going to stay in education longer. And see down there where it says it's okay to talk about? Consider this a sociological arena. It's okay to talk about religion. It's okay to talk about race. It's okay to talk about gender. It's more than okay. It is vital. If we avoid these things, we are failing our children, because these things have an effect on their education, and we've got to stop not talking about the things that actually affect them. I've just finished a program with Wiltshire Local Authority that I'm going to talk about a little bit more, a toolkit for parental engagement, and we've just now employed an undergraduate to work with us on a thing called Super Shoppers. Can I ask how many of you are parents? That's almost every hand in the room. Excellent. First thing to say is absolutely nothing I say today is meant to make you feel like you're not doing a good job. You are actually doing a good job. You clearly care about your children or you wouldn't be in this room. Part of the problem is that I'm always preaching to the converted. But nothing I say is meant to make you feel that you're not doing a good job. But have any of you ever done the weekly shop with a five-year-old? That there were a lot of groans when I said that. The Super Shoppers program is being launched in a suburb of Bath, which is in the 96th percentile for environment. It's a gorgeous place, and in the 4th percentile for education. Very few people actually go to university, go on to further education. I happen to live in that particular bit of Bath, and it's a wonderful place to live. But you can imagine what goes on with that. A lot of the people that I catch the bus with in the morning assume that I'm a cleaner, because that's what you do if you work at the university and you catch the 7 o'clock bus. Makes me wonder about what I wear. But so what we're doing is we're trying to support parents around the curriculum so that when they're shopping with the children, taking their children into the local supermarket, they've got some resources that say, this week we're looking at weights and measures. Ask your child to look at the weights and measures in your supermarket trolley. It's quite simple, and importantly, it doesn't ask the parents, it doesn't bank on the parents having any particular knowledge. It's about supporting learning in the home. So that's kind of the last 10 years of my life. You all know this, you've all know this very well. It's the closing the gap information from Scottish Government. And one of the things I really liked when I saw this was that bit where it says the use of evidence data to engage families. We are plagued, particularly in this field, with the idea of something must be done, here is something, therefore I will do it. And we need to stop doing that. We need to have some joined up thinking. We need to have some evaluation, and I'll come back to that. And we need to actually base things on research. So that's what I'm talking about. And you may notice I've marked out closing the gap and put narrowing. One of the things I was asked to do today was to be challenging. The only way to close the gap is to have a selective school system. If you're going to close the gap, you've got to say to children, you cannot come in if you're not going to hit the standard. Let's narrow the gap and have an inclusive school system. I did say it was going to be challenging. But as we go through, there are three things I want you to keep in mind, three things I want you to ask yourselves as you go through. And the first is, what are you already doing? And that's what the balloons are for. Schools are very, very, very good at what they do. I think we have one of the best teaching forces in the world in the UK. I really do. But they're very, very poor at saying, we do this well. And as an educational researcher, I know there are a couple of educational researchers in the room, you'll probably join me in saying, you go into a school, you say, that is fantastic. And immediately the head teacher says, oh, no, it's not. Not really. And I said, well, have you shared that with another school? No. Schools are doing incredible things. We need to celebrate what they're doing. We need to collate what they're doing. And you need to share what you're doing in your school with the school down the road. That is vital. And you also need to go to the school down the road and say, what are you doing? What can we learn from you? And the thing is, you would do that with children in your classrooms. Part of my message is that we have this incredibly skilled teaching force that has an incredible amount of skill around learning, all of which gets forgotten when we start talking to parents. And are there any primary teachers in the room or any primary staff? Right. If you wanted to teach secondary students, you'd have to retrain, right? You'd have to go back. But we're quite happy to say to you, you work with five-year-olds all day, and by the way, you have my utmost admiration, because that is not something I could do. Go out and talk to their parents, most of whom are older than secondary students, but we don't give you any support to do that. It's not just the kids we're failing, or the people we're failing, the people in our schools we're failing. We're also failing our staff when we don't give them the support they need. Second question is, what can we do better? Anybody have a house full of empty yogurt pots and toilet rolls? I do, and I'm only allowed to teach doctoral students, and I still have a house full of empty toilet rolls and empty... because that's what you do as a teacher. You look at something and you say, oh, I could use that. I could use that idea. You do a teaching observation, and you forget that you're doing a teaching observation because you're so struck with what somebody has done and how they're using the whiteboard or something. You're thinking, how can I use that in my process? What are we doing that we can tweak? And what aren't we doing at all that we can learn from someone else? If you take nothing else away from what I'm talking about tonight, please take those three questions away. And the thing is, if you're a teacher, if you're a TA, if you work in a school, you do this every time you walk into a classroom. Anybody ever walked out of a classroom thinking, that didn't work? Do the same with parental engagement activities. And the thing is, you never stop there with that didn't work. If you've got to walk back into the classroom tomorrow, you're thinking, that didn't work. Why didn't it work? It's always worked before. It could be a joke that fell flat. I've had that happen. It could be an activity that fell flat. It could be... but you immediately think, how can I make it better? We need to apply those skills to working with parents. A very quick rundown. This is the depressing bit of why we need this research. 20% of the children in Scotland live in poverty. And that is set to rise. And so it's set to rise across the UK. This is shameful. It is shameful for all of us in this room. It is absolutely no good saying they are responsible to that. I realise there's a minister in the room. It is no good saying they are responsible. This is a representative of democracy. This is our fault. We need to sort this out. And this is one way. And that's why the last 10 years and hopefully the next 10 years of my life is around this. This is our problem. These are our children. We need to sort this. 2/3 of those children are growing up in households where people work. I put that in there. I'm sure there's no one in this room, but we all know people who say, well, they're on benefits, they're not working. You know, they only got pregnant to get a council house. Now, I don't know about you, but certainly when I was a teenager, that wasn't first and foremost in my mind. You know, we have a problem. We have a real problem. And we know that the problem goes deeper than just being poor. It goes into life chances. We know that children growing up in poverty are much more likely to leave school without qualifications. They're much more likely to leave school early. According to the old literature, they were likely to have lower educational aspirations. It's not the case. Newer literature has shown us, when you talk to mothers across the spectrum, and you talk to small people across the spectrum, they all have high aspirations for their children, they all have high aspirations for themselves. What they don't have is a scaffold. They don't have a scaffold system to help them turn those aspirations into reality. And that comes down to social and cultural capital. And that's the basis of what's going on. And we know that there are links between educational underachievement and poverty and all of its attendant risks. Shorter lifespans, more interaction with the police on the wrong side. All of that goes into educational underachievement. But more problematically even than that is that it's a cyclic issue. People who raise their children in poverty are likely to have grandchildren that are raised in poverty. This is not a genetic problem. This is a systemic problem. And it's a system that we all live in. It's a system that we all buy into. And if you're not part of the solution, you are part of the problem. But you're all part of the solution because you wouldn't be here tonight if you weren't interested in making it better. We know that it starts early. By the time children are 7 years old, you can already discern, this is obviously an English example, but you can apply it. You can already discern about 80% of the difference in GCSE between children from different socioeconomic backgrounds. This doesn't have to be the case. It is not the case in every country. There are countries where you can't do this. There are countries where you cannot look at children's background and predict what their educational outcomes will be. And those are the countries with what the OECD calls resilient learners. We do not have resilient learners in this country. Although I don't like that phraseology because it makes it sound like it's the learner's problem rather than the system's problem. It's not the learner's problem. It is the system's problem. That is from a Save the Children document called Too Young to Fail. It is well worth reading. It's getting older now, but it is still well worth reading. Please have a comedy lined up to watch afterwards because it's extremely depressing. This is the best argument for Minions 1, 2, and 3 that I can think of. But it's really important that we read it, and it's really important that we imbibe what it says and that we work on what it says. But if we just get depressed and say the problems are insoluble, we fail everybody twice over. So the question becomes, what do we do about it? And I go back to that thing about research. This is from one of the NHS protests a few years ago. What do we want? We want evidence-based change. And when do we want it? We want it after peer review. The academics in the room will know what I mean when I say the absolute pain of peer review. And I'm sure there are no academics in the room who are reviewer two, but out there, there is reviewer two, and they're the people that wish they had written your paper, and they don't like puppies, and they're mean, and they're horrible. But academic peer review does help us. It doesn't guarantee, but it does help us see that research is robust and that it is reliable. And we need to stop doing things simply because they sound like a good idea and actually start doing things where we have some proof that at least in some instances they have led to gains in whatever we want, whether it's achievement or engagement or whatever. Rabash et al. Are economists, not educationalists. I say that in case you're wondering about whether or not educationalists can add up. These were economists, they can add up. But research has shown that around 80% of the difference in children's achievement based on socioeconomic data comes from outside the school. That will not surprise anybody who works in schools because you do not treat children differently because of the amount of money their parents have. You do not stream children based on socioeconomic status. Actually, if you stream children, you almost certainly do stream them on socioeconomic status, but you're calling it ability. Does that make some sense? But you don't treat children differently. You don't say, yeah, those of you in the front row, your parent, you qualify for free school meals. Don't even try to learn this equation. Go out and play. The rest of you, we don't do that. We treat our children better than that. The problem is not within schools or not entirely within schools. And it's not entirely down to schools to solve. One of the problems is we talk about an achievement gap and therefore we figure it's school's problem because it's an achievement gap and we keep asking schools to solve the problem and that's, we have a Department of Education, but it really only deals with schools. Have you ever thought of that? Are there any sports coaches in the room? One or two? Any dance teachers, music teachers, scout leaders, guide leaders? A few of you. Is that education? Are you educating people? Yeah, you really are. You're teaching them things. They are learning things. There are rules involved. Learning the leg before wicket rule in cricket, don't ask. I know it has a name, you know.
Offside.
Offside rule. The offside. Actually, I think I understand the offside rule. That one doesn't bother me so much. But that's education, but it doesn't, for the most part, come under the purview of the Department of Education. It's not down to schools alone. It's also not about parent blaming. And that's why I started asking if you had parents. If you were parents. Obviously, you had parents. If you were parents. One of the things that schools always ask me, and I've just published a blog that's come live today, how do we deal with hard-to-reach parents? And the first thing is, you stop calling them hard-to-reach. You stop saying it's your fault. It's not about parent blaming. It's also not about blaming schools. The problem is systemic, and until we realize that it's a systemic problem, we are not actually going to be able to change it, because you're going to be trying to change it in your school, and you're going to be trying to change it in your school, and you're going to be trying to change it in your school, and nobody's talking to student teachers about it, and nobody's talking to the profession as a whole about it, and therefore you may get it right in your school, but the school down the road is still suffering. And the kids in your school will go somewhere else at some point. My apologies to anybody sitting in the front row. I will call on you at some point or point at you. It's just because you happen to be sitting there. But that doesn't mean that we have to leave it to somebody else to solve it. Just because it's a systemic problem doesn't mean that the problem has to be dealt with systemically. It does have to be dealt with systemically. We do have to talk to the policymakers. We have to hope that the policymakers listen to us when we're talking about it. But we also have to do something about the children that are in our schools now and the parents that are in our schools now, because they only get one bite of the cherry. I was reading a novel the other day. It was set in the 1930s, and there was a mother who had to discipline her children, and she said, "I do hate disciplining people." And I just wondered how different our discourse would be if we stopped talking about children and started talking about people. That might actually change the discourse in schools. And if we stop talking about parents and actually start talking about people. Interesting concept. And we need to be the local face of the solution. I, as a governor in a local school, kind of local school, need to be the face of the solution for my school. I need to challenge my school. I need to challenge my head teacher. It's a very brave head teacher who has a governor whose job title is educational leadership and management. It's an extremely brave head teacher. But we also need to challenge our schools, where we're parents, where we're working, where we're teachers. And I think the missing gap in missing link in closing or narrowing the gap is parental engagement in children's learning. And this is what Stephen Garrard, who is a professor at the University of Durham, and his team said after reviewing a lot of interventions that could actually work to support children's learning. And what they said was parental involvement, I'm trying to move on to the word parental engagement, but he still uses involvement, is the only one of the things they looked at that was worth investing in. Let's put our money where we actually know it's going to do some work. And we said this a few years ago, parental engagement in supporting learning in the home is the single most important changeable factor in student achievement. There are lots of things we can't change. I can't change parents' experience of education. I can change what their future experience will be, but I cannot change the fact that they had a horrible experience in their own teaching and their own learning. I cannot change the fact that they're facing economic challenge. I would love to, but I can't. I can't change the fact of whether mum has a degree or not, and that is a predictive factor. I can't change that. I may be able to help scaffold mum back into learning if that's what mum wants, but this is where we need to concentrate. And just for a couple, you didn't think I was going to talk at you for an entire hour, did you? Could you just talk to each other just for a couple of minutes? What do you think parental engagement is? How do you know it when you see it? Just talk to each other just for a couple of minutes. And I do just mean, I know I've got a room full of educationalists, so it may be difficult to bring you back, but do talk to each other. Fabulous. there's contact details. Drop me a line about it. Yeah, I will take this, but do drop me a line about it. Yeah. Yeah. Oh no, that's great. Thank you very much. If I leave it here, come and get me and throw it at me. Can I bring you back? I'm always very, very reluctant to interrupt these conversations because, quite honestly, the conversations between people who work around education are actually far more important than listening to me. I'm always very tempted to just send you my slides and let you keep talking, but that's not what I've been asked here to do, so I won't. Can I just take a little bit of feedback? Does somebody want to tell me what parental... I'm not looking for my definition, by the way, because I always have to look up my definition. But what does parental engagement look like? What is it? How do you know it when you see it? Somebody want to be brave and give me a... Yes?
A group of children and parents and teachers all in the same room together, engaging with each other and actually talking to one another instead of doing the old move around the room.
Yeah, I'm going to come back to parents' night, but yeah, actually engaging with each other, yes. Learning, in fact. Yeah. Actually, if they're engaging with each other, they're almost quite per forza learning, aren't they?
Valuing yes. each other as well.
Sorry?
Valuing each other.
Valuing each other. Yeah. Can we please ditch the language of professionals and parents? A lot of parents are already professionals, but it immediately says, you know, well, I'm a professional. I'm a learning professional. No, you're not. You're a schooling professional. Parents have been teaching their kids, and the kids have been learning from their parents since at least the day where they were born, if not early, earlier. So, yes. Anybody else?
With and not to.
Yeah. Done unto. Hands up, anybody who's been done unto. Yes. Yeah. Yes. At the back.
I think parental engagement is a bit of a distraction from actually getting each child within the school an equal opportunity. Because as you said earlier, a lot of parents are professionals, a lot of them aren't. So that imbalance in the house or round about the house shouldn't affect the imbalance, or there should be an imbalance in the school. So I think parental engagement is an excellent idea. It's a distraction to say that somebody's been unsuccessful because there isn't good parental engagement or there isn't good support in the house because they're in school 5 days a week.
They're out of school 75% of their waking hours.
Yeah.
So I agree with you, it can be. I agree with you entirely, it can be. And what we need to make sure is that when we do it, it's not. And that what we're actually doing is supporting parental engagement in the home rather than talking about the stuff that's a distraction. But I agree with you entirely, it can be. And it's about, and I would love a system that is equitable so that it doesn't matter where children's background are. And there are systems like that in the UK. There are systems like that in the world, but we don't have one. And while we're working toward that, we also need to work. Because the problem is it's going to take us 20 or 30 years to get there. And the kids we've got now have only got this bite of the cherry. So I think we need to do both. I don't think it's either or. One of the flagship statements of the second wave of feminism was deny the dichotomy. And this is a dichotomy we have to deny. I agree with you, it can be a distraction, but I think it needs to be part of the work towards social equity and social mobility that we have. I will come back to that, but yeah.
Janet, would parental engagement be something to do with community?
It can be, should be.
Rather than just learning in schools, would it be beyond the school gates, the whole community where the school exists and the young people live, families live?
Yes. I mean, I should have said at the very beginning, when I say parent, I mean adult with a caring responsibility for the child. So it could be a parent, it could be a grandparent, it could be a sibling, it could be an auntie, it could be an uncle, it could be a foster carer, it could be an adopted... I'm not going to say it could be an adoptive parent because that's a parent, but it could be anybody. But yes, it should be the community. And again, we have very good research, again in the US, right, because we haven't done the research here, that people who go to university as part of a faith group, doesn't matter what faith group, but as part of a faith group, do better. And part of that is because they've got a whole group of people saying, have you studied for that test? It's not the faith so much as the community element. You know, and there's some really interesting work by an academic called Susan Pinker, who was looking at the effect of community, because there's a little small community in Italy, and I can't remember where it is, where people live a lot longer than they should. And they eat exactly the same diet as everybody else does, but what they have is an incredibly solid community. So yes, you're right.
I just say as well, one thing that our new head teacher's come in to do, he has created a new set of values for the school, but he's done it through the children and all the feeder primary schools as well. They've all been consulted by their children, by the parent by the pupil council, should I say, and it's gone out the whole parent forum, and the pupils have come up with a whole set of words, and the parents as well have to vote upon these words to bring everyone together under the same core values for the school.
Exactly, and in one of the literature reviews we did, one of the things that we said is if you're trying to do things that don't accord with the values of the parents, it's not going to work. And you need to actually talk to the parents. I was asked yesterday, you know, how do we deliver what parents want? Well, ask them first. I do need to get on, but hold on to those ideas. In a way, I now want to walk away because you've got the answers. But those of you with children, did any of you put your children into preschool, early years, whatever, something, some organized fashion before they went to school? Yeah. Were any of you told by relatives that this was mean, horrible, and evil, and you were ruining your children? Yes. I'm not going to say to throw Kathy Silver's work at them, because there are 12 technical appendices to this, and that's kind of grievous bodily harm. But Kathy Silver and her team tracked children from the time they were rising four, I believe, three or four, to the time they left primary school. And even at the end of primary school, they could still see the benefits of being involved in some form. And it didn't have to be all the time. It could be, you know, 2 or 3 days, but a week. But it had to be something. But even with that, what she and her team have said is what's up there. For all children, the quality of the home learning environment is more important for intellectual and social development than parental occupation, education, or income. What parents do is more important than who parents are. Another one of the phrases I really, really want to ditch is, what can you expect from that group of parents, whether it's from a particular area, from a particular ethnicity, from whatever. What you can expect is that they love their children. The vast majority of parents love their children. We have strictures in place for parents who don't, but the vast majority of parents love their children, and that's what we need them to do. But one of the things we need schools to do and school staff to do is say, we care about your kids as well. Now, it's obvious that you do, because you're there every day and you're working 50 or 60 hours a week. But sometimes a simple statement needs to be said. We care about Molly too. So the question then becomes, what is it that parents do? Well, this is Hart and Risley's research from the latter part of the last century. And this is what a four-year-old hears over an hour. And they divided their parents among these three ideas of professional white-collar workers, working-class blue-collar workers, and people in receipt of welfare, which is a much higher bar. You've got to be far poorer in the States to get welfare. And over an hour, a child in a professional home would hear 30, 35 times, oh, well done, good boy, good girl, oh, you did that very nicely. And about 5 times, no, don't do that, that's not what we do. But look at the other end of the scale. At the other end of the socioeconomic scale, a child is hearing twice as many prohibitions as they are attributions. So they're hearing twice as many times, no, don't do this, that's not what we do. What effect is that likely to have on a child? What effect is that likely to have on a child?
Destructive.
It's destructive. Lack of self-esteem, lack of self-belief, lack of belief in the ability to learn. And the example I give of this, of absolutely typical middle-class parenting, was saying to my 2-year-old at one point, oh, you walked through that door so nicely. Because it was the only thing the child had done all morning that I could actually compliment. And I knew I should be complimenting the child, and therefore I'd... But really, you walked through the door. Now, but he did. He walked through the door very nicely. But the second thing, and this is where Hart and Risley made their name, they published something called the 35 million word gap. And this is over the 5 years of life before a child goes into kindergartens in the States. And a child in a professional home would have heard around 45 million words. Not unique words, I'm not sure there are 45 million unique words, but people speaking to each other, the radio on, the TV on, Thomas the Tank Engine on, whatever. Whereas a child at the other end of the socioeconomic scale would have heard maybe 15 million words. This was on average over their sample. The sample wasn't large, but every time I say this, I see heads from early years, people nodding and agreeing. What effect is that likely to have on a child coming into school? They have less ability around language. They have less vocabulary coming in. They have less vocabulary that the school expects them to have. And they're starting off in the UK, they're starting off almost a year behind. They're starting off 11 months behind their more prosperous peers. Now, 11 months to you and me, or to me, because I'm probably the oldest person in the room, really doesn't make that much difference. 11 months to a five-year-old, that's a fifth of their life. Or a little bit less than a fifth of their life. But you know what I mean? That's a very big gap. Those of you who work in early years, do you see that difference? And of course, that's going to have an effect. How many of you have ever mispronounced a word because you read it first rather than hearing it first? Yeah, Halcyon really shouldn't be pronounced that way. A lot of these kids are never going to have that problem because they're never going to be reading at a level where they're reading words that they don't know how to pronounce. Because they're coming in so far behind, they don't make that up. And there are effects on readiness to learn and self-esteem. Now, this is your starter for 10. Complete this sentence. The grand old Duke of York... As an American raising children in the UK, that flummoxed me for years. Why is this man running up and down hills? Mary, Mary, quite contrary. Little Jack Horner. And depending on the age of your children, you may or may not cringe a little bit when you see this. One fish, yeah. You can gauge the age of children. One fish, two fish, red fish. I never want to see another blue fish as long as I live. But the thing is, the reason that you cringe with this or the hungry caterpillar or Ellie the elephant or Elmo or whatever it is because you've read it 75,000 times. And the reason you've read it 75,000 times is because that's probably what happened to you. And your parents wore out the Winnie the Pooh books and therefore you replaced them for your children. A lot of the parents that I'm talking about didn't have that experience. And so when you send a book home with a child, they read it with a child because that's what you've asked them to do, but they don't realize, because nobody's ever told them, that the actual value is reading it 75,000 times. That's possibly an exaggeration. But, although with some of them, it's not. Because you're having that conversation around the book. What do you think he's going to do next? If you were doing that, what would you do? Why is he wearing that? I've always wondered, why is he wearing that? And it's the conversation that you have around the book. It's around the literacy. And we know this, singing nursery rhymes, reading the same book over and over again, they're all related to literacy. But not a lot of parents don't realize that. And somebody asked me at one of the events I was doing not too long ago, do they have to be in English? The research would say no, they really don't. Because rhyme tends to work the same way, words tend to work the same. The language structure may be very, very different. I'm very impoverished. I only speak two languages and they have more or less the same structure, so I'm okay. But a lot of people speak, and that is a value, and that's something we really need to value and we need to bring in. But it doesn't matter what language they're singing nursery rhymes to their children in, because they're still singing the nursery rhymes. They're singing the words, they're dealing with their children, they're engaged with their children. And teachers always say to me, and I see this entirely, you're asking us to do something new. I'm already working 70 hours a week. You're asking me to do something new. And I happen to know that it isn't true that you rock up at 9 and leave at 3. I really know that. We don't rock up at 9 and leave at 3. And no, we don't stop working in May when the students go home, just in case anybody thought that's what happened. But parental engagement can have positive impacts on behavior, on attendance, on engagement with schoolwork, on homework, and on outcomes and achievements. And the point is, yes, there may be some extra work that I'm asking you to do now, but there are benefits to be reaped, and there are work that you don't have to do. One of the things I suggest to schools is to make a pile of all the information that you send home. Just gather all the information that you send home over a term and stick it in a pile on the table. Now take out everything that doesn't have anything to do with learning, and consider why you're sending the rest of it home. We are actually about learning. Now, there's some things you do have to send home. The school is closed tomorrow because the boiler broke. That's got to go home, okay? But if it's not about learning, is it worth your time and is it worth the parents' time and is there a better way of dealing with it? Concentrate on the core task. We know that what makes a difference to children's achievement is the attitude toward learning in the home. So the question becomes, how can you support that? Because you aren't actually going home with the children every day. They aren't aware of the fact that you go home. Of course, they think that you actually hang yourself up in the closet and you're there on Monday morning. And the question then becomes, what do we want? Do we want involvement or do we want engagement, and what's the difference? Did anybody have I'm not going to say a full English breakfast. Did anybody have a full Scottish breakfast this morning with eggs and bacon and sausage? Sorry about that. Well, I tend to say, and it depends on the audience whether or not this works, that the chicken is involved in the egg, but the pig is engaged in the bacon. And that's kind of the difference. And it's interesting, when we started the research a few years ago and we asked school staff what the value of parental engagement was, this is what they said. And because this is being recorded, I'm actually going to read the slide to you, forgive me, but otherwise it's not going to make any sense to anybody listening. They said it was things like reading in class and going on trips and parents' evenings. That has no effect on achievement. Absolutely none. Not because they're not good things, but I would like you to spend a minute and think of the three parents most likely to come into school. Not those parents? Now think of the three parents you want to see most. What's the overlap between the three? Two? It's a null set, isn't it? Note the only mathematical term you will hear me use. It's a null set. Okay. These are very good things. These are great things, but they are a very bad place to stop. It's kind of like Wikipedia. It's not a bad place to start. It's a very bad place to stop. When we asked parents what is the value, this is what they told us. They said it was about helping with homework and keeping track of coursework. Any of you have people doing in secondary school? Keeping track of their coursework is almost impossible, isn't it? I have no, you know, my children read things that I could not help them with. One of them read economics and the other one read double science. I'm a theologian, you know. But this is what parents said. When we asked teenagers, this is what they said. And this was up and down the country. And they said it was about moral support, it was about interest in learning, and it was about guidance. And one thing that came up over and over again, and if you've got teenagers, you're not going to believe this, but I promise you it's true, was the importance of parents saying, how was your day? What did you do today? And I finally said to a young woman in a school in Docklands, do you answer her? Because as far as I know, my children did nothing in school the entire time they were there. They both did very well, and they're both, you know, I'm very proud of them as adults, but as far as I know, they did nothing in the schools that we sent them to. And this young woman said, no. God, no, miss, I wouldn't answer her. But she's not home, I go find her, and then I make her ask me, and then I ignore her. But if she asks me, I know she cares. So please keep on asking. You can vary the question. What do you know now that you didn't know this morning? Although if you've got teenagers, be aware of the fact that you may find out that they've learned things you didn't want them to learn. You know, what did you learn today? What did you like best today? What did you like least today? What was your favorite lesson today? But keep asking, because what we heard from teenagers up and down the country was, if my parents care, I care. Remember a young man saying to me, I am not here for my health, miss. Nothing makes you feel older, by the way, than doing research with teenagers. You know, it's not like it was in the olden days, miss, and you're thinking I had a clay tablet. So my children came home and said, do you have any Beatles tapes? And I said, yeah. And they said, good, we need them for history. And I thought, that's over. But to give you an example of this, I was working in a school, again, a school in a very deprived area in the middle of England, and I was talking to a group of Year 8 students, and you will recognize these students, even if you don't recognize the individuals, you recognize the types. A young woman came in, sat down across from me, Year 8 student, so 13, 14. All of her books were perfectly covered in exactly the same paper. Her hair was perfect, her uniform was perfect, and she was 5 minutes early. You know this young woman, don't you? 5 minutes after we were supposed to start, the door bangs open, young man runs in, takes the last seat at the table. I could tell what he'd had for breakfast and lunch by looking at his sweatshirt. You know this child? Yes, I raised this child. Not this particular child, but... And it was interesting, they were talking about their Year 7 Achievement Awards at the end of the year, and the young woman predictably said, I've got all my certificates, miss, and they're in plastic folders in a binder, and I take them out and I look at, you know this child, right? And the young lad at the end looked at her and said, you what? And he looked at me and said, I don't know where my certificates are, miss, but I'm going to get a bunch more this year, because that way my dad will come to school and he'll be proud of me again. At which point you're thinking two things. One, does his dad know? And two, you're a grown-up researcher, do not cry. But does his his dad know that the reason this child is trying to achieve has nothing to do with getting good GCSEs, it has nothing to do with getting a good job, has nothing to do with getting good grades. It has to do with his dad coming to school, watch him walk across the stage, shake the head teacher's hand and be told, well done, thou good and faithful servant. That's why that child was trying to achieve. I was talking to a young man, and he was in year seven, so first year of secondary school, the type of child that looked like butter wouldn't melt in his mouth, and he was already on a program to keep him from being excluded. This was December, so he'd been there a couple of months. And he was talking to me about his behavior issues, and he said, I'm trying so hard, Miss, I'm trying hard to behave. And I said, that's good. You know, are your teachers pleased with you? And he said, yeah, I guess so. It's nice when your teachers are pleased with you, but your dad's your dad. And again, I'm thinking, don't cry. But that is what kids up and down, young people up and down the country told us, secondary school students told us. One young man didn't want any of this. He was about to finish his A-levels. He didn't need anybody's help, Jack. But everybody else said this is what it was about. The guidance thing, I've never had a job, Miss. How can I choose my options? How can I choose what I'm going to study? I need my parents' help. There was one group of 16, 17-year-old girls that I worked with in one school, or I was talking to in one school, and they had a friend whose mum, for whatever reason, was not engaged. And they said, oh, we try, Miss. We try and ride her, their term. You know, we try and ride her. We give her a hard time about her homework. We give her a hard time about her uniform. We give her a hard time when she's not here, but it's not the same as having your mum care, Miss. It's not the same at all. These teenagers understood the real value of parental engagement, and it had nothing to do with coming to parents' evening. Absolutely nothing to do with bums on seats. It had to do with caring about their children's engagement. So if you go back to those definitions that you were talking to with each other, and this is a very good thing to take to a staff meeting, and I'll come back to staff meetings in a minute. Were you talking about involvement with the school, that upper level, or were you talking about engagement with learning? And that's what we actually need to support. And I said this a couple of years ago. So much has been added to our existing model of schools that we've run out of attachment points. What would happen if you went back into school tomorrow, into the staff meeting, and said, I've got a really good innovation I want to try? Yeah, Run for the Hills is a very good example of that. And what I was likening schools to is kind of one of those backpacks that's got lots of little bits where you can hang carabiners. We have no more little bits where you can hang a carabiner. We have innovation fatigue, and we have no more bits that we can do. And I'm not arguing that we do new bits. I'm arguing that we change some of our fundamental beliefs that will help us realize what we do need to do and what we don't need to do. And the last sentence of that is we need to get radical. And I mean that in the high old term. Anybody that actually studied Latin will know that the root of radical is radice. The root is root. We've got to get back to the reason. And if you were my doctoral students, I would now ask you to break up and think about what, not break up, break up into groups, and think about why you went into education in the first place. Because it's something that we don't get time to think about. But the vast majority of us went into education in one way or another, and I've been teaching since I was 13, and that was a long time ago, in the voluntary sector as well as the formal sector. We went into it because we wanted to affect change. We want to make life better for kids. Either we loved our subjects and we want to spread that, or we were very, very poorly taught ourselves and thought, we can do better than that. Or we want to make sure that life is better for the next generation. Teachers are, by nature, people who work in schools, TAs, dinner ladies, everybody who works in schools, by nature, are change agents. You are subversive of the system. I applaud that and continue to be so. Because the minute we buy into the system and say, yes, this is the way it has to be, we failed. The system is never perfect. We have got to keep changing it. And it's what you do as a teacher. You walk out of a room and you think, that went really well. Excellent. Let me go write that down before I forget why it happened. Or that didn't go well, and I need to change it. If I were to walk up to you and say, look, I'm really sorry, but Miss Miller won the lottery yesterday, and she's not coming in, so you've got her class tomorrow. The first thing you say to me is, well, A, why didn't I buy a lottery ticket? But the next thing you say is, tell me about the kids. Who needs stretching? Who needs support? You know, I need to know how to deal with those children. The skills are already there. We need to change the emphasis, I think. We need to change the emphasis away from schooling to learning. It seems quite a simple thing, but it's actually quite difficult to do. How many of you have a school improvement or school development plan? Ever occur to you, why am I trying to improve the school? It's like building a transport system that stops a mile short of the city. You're not trying to improve the school, you're trying to improve learning. We need to stop concentrating on the school, and we need to stop concentrating on schooling and actually start talking about learning. And the diagram that's there has three large circles, and the first is learning, and that starts at least at the day you're born, if not earlier. And it goes on to at least till the day you die. And then there's education, that's formalized learning, it's learning with rules, and that's why I was asking about scout leaders and sports leaders. But within that, there's schooling. And in a perfect world, an ideal world, they nest within each other. I'm not convinced that all of my schooling had to do with learning. I think a lot of it had to do with being complacent and being a good little girl. But I failed, by the way. But can you see the shift that I'm actually asking you to make? It means that we need to actually think about what we're doing. Think about a school project where you're looking at not what are we going to do and how are we going to improve the school, but how are we going to improve learning? Think about a capital building project where the question is not how will this improve the school, but how will it improve learning? Those of you who are parents, on a scale of 1 to 10, where would you put parents evening of usefulness? 1 being not and 10 being, oh my God, fantastic. 1, 2. How many of you who just said 1 or 2 are teachers? We know that parents' evenings, the way we do them, for the most part, some schools do really innovative stuff, but we know they're not really particularly good. And one of the reasons is that we use them for reporting. We send home a report, and then 3 days later, we bring parents in and we read them a report we have just sent them. Now, I'm not saying that's necessarily a bad thing. Does anybody want to hazard a guess at the percentage of adults in the UK who cannot read at level one? Anybody want to hazard a guess? 17%. 17 out of 100 of your parents probably cannot read at level one. Some of those parents are going to need help to interpret the report. Actually, all of your parents may need help to interpret the report, depending on how the report is written. You know, if you're sending it home saying, Johnny got a level 5, the immediate question is that good? Does it go from 1 to 5 or from 1 to 10? And what should Johnny be getting? Yeah. What if parents' evenings were not about reporting, but about learning? And one of the schools that I'm going to mention a little bit later when I talk about the toolkit has started sending home a series of questions that parents can ask at parents' evening. How can I help my child learn? What can I do to help my child learn? And they've countered that with a series of questions for staff around what can you as a parent tell me that will help me help your child? Can you see how that changes the power balance? If you as a teacher have a child who's struggling, really, really struggling with, say, maths or chemistry or theology or whatever, do you bring them in, sit them down on the other side of a table from you and open a terrifying book of data? Almost certainly not. You sit next to them and you work with them. Parent of a child who's struggling, you bring them in, you sit them down on the other side of the table and you open a terrifying book of data. The skills are already there. What we need to do is start thinking about learning rather than about quite so much about schooling. I am not trying to paint a beautiful picture here. There are barriers to parental engagement. I'm not saying it's all wonderful and every parent will respond to you with open arms. No, they won't. And the main barrier is parents' own experience of education. One head teacher said to me, every time my parents see somebody in a tie, they're in trouble. And what do you see when you walk into a school? This is not an excuse to come to school in jeans, by the way. I have had people go home and say, Dr. Goodall said I can come to school in jeans. That's not what Dr. Goodall's saying. Although I'm not absolutely convinced of the value of ties. Particularly if you're wearing a breakaway, you know, a card on a breakaway chain so that you can't be strangled, and yet you're wearing a tie. Has it ever? Yeah, think about that. But parents' experience of education. And you have parents who cannot walk onto the school grounds. It's not that they don't want to. They physically cannot. They break out into anxiety. They break out into cold sweats. Why are you asking them to do something like this? What is so sacred about the school grounds? Is there really nowhere else you can meet them? How many of you have a leisure center somewhere near your school? Yeah, some of you. I can almost guarantee you that on Sunday afternoon it's full of non-resident dads and their kids. They probably have a room you could use. See what I mean? Think a little bit out of the box. And then there are practical issues. Time, childcare, transport, and cost. Question I always ask, when does the last bus leave your school that will get the furthest parent home? If you do not know that, how are you planning events? Admittedly, bus timetables are terrifying. It's actually one of the ways that they judge numeracy, is asking people to read a London bus timetable. But how do you know that? When do your parents celebrate religious feasts? You're extremely unlikely to have parents' evening on Good Friday. But you might have it on Purim. You might have it in Ramadan. When do your parents actually celebrate these feasts? One of the schools I'm working with in London had very little parental engagement with their summer fete, and they realized it was because they were calling it a barbecue. What does barbecue say to you? What do you expect to eat at a barbecue? Yeah. They had most of their parents were vegetarians. They were coming to a barbecue. They changed it to a picnic. A lot more parents came. But why would you go to something where you're going to immediately feel excluded? Does that make some sense? How many of your parents work shifts, and when do they work them? If for parents' evening you are saying to mum, you've got to come in, and you've got to come in on Tuesday night, and that means mum misses a shift, that may mean her kids don't eat on Sunday. Now, how can you accommodate that? Is there really no other way you can accommodate that? This is meant to make those of you with teenagers feel better. The OECD found that 15 minutes conversation a week with teenagers is linked to engagement with reading, positively correlated to engagement with reading and literacy. Now, everybody always assumes that has to be 15 minutes conversation in a book-lined library, sitting down with a cup of tea, saying, "Now, darling, how do you feel about Nietzsche?" I don't know about you, but conversations with my teenagers were much more likely to be, "Will you get in the car?" Or, "Where is your shoe? Why have we only got one shoe?" Somewhere in the universe there is a black hole into which all of my son's socks went for the first 6 years of his life. It can be conversation about social media. It can be conversation about movies. In my family, that would have been saying to my daughter, "You saw that movie. Is that a good movie for your mother to see? Can I go see that movie?" Because she saw more movies than I did. It's the conversation that makes the difference. This is something we can tell parents. Parents of teenagers are terrified, partially because they're isolated. When kids are in primary school, you've got lots of other parents to lean on, and parents going up to secondary school have told us they feel like the security blanket's been yanked away from them. And every parent of a teenager is dealing with the issues in isolation, and they're convinced that they have the only 16-year-old in the world that has ever talked back to their mother that way. They really don't, honestly. And one of the schools I worked with actually ran a session on parenting teenagers, but they called it, "I've got a teenager, get me out of here." Which is much better than having, and it was parent-run, it was parent-to-parent. Things like saying, "You know, I know your Molly's really struggling with math. Mrs. Smith's Johnny was struggling with math, and they cracked it last year. Can I put you in touch with Mrs. Smith?" That, for a lot of parents, is far less scary than, "Can you come in and talk to Mr. James about math, please?" You see what I mean? It's about being innovative. You would do this with your students. You would be innovative with your students. You would think outside the box with your students. Do it with their parents as well. Very quickly, I want to tell you about a toolkit project that we ran. And the first thing I'm going to say before anybody asks is that this was a year-long project that came in at just over £2,000. So it's not what you would call an expensive project. It was in collaboration with Wiltshire Local Authority. Does anybody know Wiltshire, Somerset? It's fantastic. It's a wonderful place to live. But it's full of single-track roads, I have found, to my cost, because my sat-nav really loves single-track roads. Turn down unnamed road. No. And you tend to be driving down, and you've got Stonehenge on one side and a sign on the other side saying, "Live ordnance, don't go into the field." And indeed, one of our schools has 56% mobility over the year because it's a school where there are a lot of military families. We had some very small rural schools. We had large inner city secondary academies. So we had the range. And what we did was we gave them a toolkit for parental engagement. And I'll talk to you a little bit about how that worked. But we asked schools to go back to the very beginning, and we asked them to make a list of what they wanted. Absolute blue sky thinking. What do you want from parental engagement? We then asked them to make a list of the barriers, what's getting in the way. And the heart of it was actually an action plan where they created specific targets for what they were going to do. And they were told increasing parental engagement is not a good target. Every child in year 7 will receive a positive phone call. That's a good target. And then named the person who was responsible for it. And we were asking schools to evaluate what they were doing. You won't be surprised to hear that didn't happen. But what we found, and what was at the heart of it, was this idea of evaluation. And this is Thomas Guskey's framework for the evaluation of teacher CPD. And there are 5 levels to it. Participant reaction, we had a nice lunch. Participant learning, I have learned a thing. What am I taking home? The fourth, and I know I've skipped three, is participant use of new knowledge. You go to a training thing and you come home and you think, I'm going to use that. I'm going to use that tomorrow. And the fifth is pupil outcome. The third is the one we wanted to crack with the toolkit project. How many of you have had the experience of walking into a staff room and saying, I've got a really good idea, and somebody says, we tried that in 1978 and it doesn't work? Anybody had that experience? It happens in universities, by the way. You're not alone. If the organization's not willing to change, you've got a real problem on your hands. And that's why in some of the work we've done, like the literature review in 2011, said you need your senior leadership team on board. You have got to have your senior leadership on board. Because I'm talking about an organizational change here. But some of the things schools are doing, and I was blown away by what schools were doing. One of the schools is sending home a weekly thunk in their newsletter. This is a primary school. We're talking about weights and measures this week. When you're cooking, talk to your child about weights and measures. We're talking about multiplication this week. When you're scaling up a recipe, talk to your child about it. We're talking about colours this week. It's easily enough done, isn't it? Thank you letters to members of staff or parents. Schools are incredibly good at closing the feedback loop with children. You suggested we did this. That's a really good idea. We're doing it now. They're really bad at it, parents. We had any number of parents tell us through the research, we tell this school stuff and they never listen to us. While the school is saying, parents gave us this really good idea and it's such a good idea, but they hadn't closed the feedback loop. And this is a simple, you said we did. Or, did you know, by the way, that Miss Murray won an award this week for rowing or something? It's about personalizing. And one of the things that came across from a lot of the schools was we have to be brave. We've got to keep trying new things. One school banned staff from standing together on the playground because parents would approach one, but they wouldn't approach two. Simple things. A lot of our schools were involved in a thing called Achievement for All. I don't know if you've heard about Achievement for All, but it's aimed at children on the SEN register, but the heart of it is a structured conversation with parents. And a lot of the schools that were doing that with their children who had special educational needs expanded it to everybody else because it works so well. Bacon Buddies and Books was written down by every head teacher in the room except the one that was suggesting it. And it's a school where there are a lot of dads that are unemployed, a lot of dads are around. And what they were doing was inviting dads in to have breakfast with the kids and stay on and read. It's still at the school, still the school gate. One school asked parents of children coming into the secondary school to write a letter to their children saying, I am proud of you because. If you had received one of those at the ripe old age of 12, wouldn't it still be in a box somewhere that you would take out? So simple. Think of the effect on children's self-esteem. Copy to the school. And another, the second to last one there, a primary school asked parents to fill in a form saying, what can you tell me about your child that will help me to help them learn? So a child coming in at 4 or 5, he is afraid of polka dots, but anything you say about dinosaurs, he's right there. That's helpful to know. He will fall asleep at 3 o'clock no matter what you do. One of the things we found through our research was children telling us, my mum never sees my best work because it's up on the walls at school. Texting parents pictures of good work. A quick text to parents saying, just thought you should know, John was brilliant today. Doesn't have to be text, it could be email, it could be one of the hundreds of apps that are out there. And some of the schools were really brave and they moved meetings off-site. I'm not suggesting having parents' evening in the local pub, not sure that's a good idea. You could have parents' evening in the local swimming baths. This school happened to be across the street from a church. They moved a lot of their meetings over to the church. It was slightly colder, but they had a lot more parents. Because scary as churches can be, they weren't as scary as the school was for that parental group. Does that make some sense? There will be somewhere. Strangely enough, a lot of big supermarkets have a community room. Parents are not terrified. Well, supermarkets are terrifying in their own way, but not in that way. What we found is that schools are shifting their ideas from involvement to engagement. And schools recognized the need to change the systems, not just interventions. And the schools that went furthest with this actually incorporated it into their working and incorporated it in their school development plans and their school improvement plans. One governor said to me, we aren't following the toolkit anymore. We're really sorry about that. But now we look at everything as a way to engage parents. It's like, absolutely, ditch the toolkit. You don't need it anymore. It's rather like having a support, for your times tables. You get to the point where you don't need it. What we've learned is that schools need support. We cannot leave schools to do this on their own. We can't leave staff to do it on their own. Like I was saying before, if you were asked to suddenly teach a new group of students, a new age group of students, you'd be given more training. How many of you had something around parental engagement, if you are a trained teacher, had something around parental engagement in your teacher training? One. Yeah. Two. Hurrah! That's two more than I usually get in England, so well done. But we are failing our teaching staff as well. We need to do something about this. But if we can change perceptions of what parental engagement is, away from bums on seats at parents' evening to actual engagement in the home, then we can change our practice, and then the practice can become embedded. As I say, some of the most effective practices come from putting into the school's development plan. And we know this. Again, Thomas Guskey says that teachers need to see results before they change their beliefs. Those of you who work in schools know this perfectly well. And also those of you who have raised children know this perfectly well. My mother-in-law is a very wise woman, and she says you can raise children by the book provided you have a different book for every child. You know. I think there's some really important messages we need to get home to parents, and they're messages I wish someone had told me when my kids were growing up. That what matters is that they care about their children and they care about their children's learning. They do not need to know the answers. They need to care that the answers get found. And that's very different. And it's a change that happens as your children age. When your children are five, you know the answers. Some of them. I did get asked why God made the dinosaurs first, which kind of flummoxed me. But they need to care about the children, the answers getting found. Does anybody recognize that? I don't mean the individual animal. It's a still from the David Attenborough thing where he was talking about the octopus that walked on land. None of us are safe, by the way. We thought we were safe because octopus, whatever the plural of octopus is, couldn't come out of water. We are actually very happy to sit in our living rooms with our kids and learn from a geologist, which is what David Attenborough is, about octopus that can walk on lands. We need that. What's a five-year-old's favorite word? Why? Children are sponges. Why? If you take a 10-minute walk with a three-year-old, it's going to take you 2.5 days because you've got to stop and look at every leaf. It is not a 15-year-old's favorite word. I'm not going to ask you what a 15-year-old's favorite word is. It's not quite that late in the evening. But that love of learning, we need to help parents keep going. The most important thing is that it doesn't exist in education unless that's not the most important thing, but it doesn't exist in education unless it's got an acronym. You've learned that. PEWCL is Parental Engagement with Children's Learning, can help break the cycles of poverty and underachievement, but only when it's based on foundations of respect and trust between parents and staff and parents and community and school and community. I was asked by a group of head teachers once to come in and talk to them about how they could engage with their community, and I told them, why am I talking to a group of head teachers? If you want to engage with the community, why are you talking to me? Go out and talk to members of the community. That's going to be actually far more useful. You know this. When parents and schools work together, children do better from the parental engagement guidance. We've known this for a long time. That's 2006. We need to go beyond giving parents information to actually working in partnership around their children's learning. It is not about parents coming in to help in school. It is about supporting parents to help learning in the home. And for a lot of parents, that happens naturally. For a lot of parents, it doesn't because the system is not set up to help them do it. And we need to change the emphasis. We need to shift the emphasis and support those parents. And I've lost something. There are some challenges, agreed. Parental perceptions of schools as obstacles. Lack of encouragement, not communicating. Schools talking about hard-to-reach parents. Parents have told us schools are often hard to reach. And parents' perception of schools. Parents may see the school as part of a system they need to protect their children against. And you are never going to crack that if you stay inside the walls of the school. Well, you might, but it's very unlikely. I remember somebody saying to me, parents won't come into the playground. What do I do? How do I get them past the gate? And I said, walk outside the gate. And it actually made a difference. It didn't crack it for every parent, but little things. I think this is what happens if you have 100 children who are taking their GCSE exams in England, 100 children in free school meals. This is the number of them that will actually get the golden standard that they need to get into university. And like I say, I'm a theologian, so, you know, pictures mean more than numbers. Can you see all the grayed out kids? Those are the kids that we as a system are failing. I'm not sure we can get to the point that they're all there, but I think we can do something for the orange people. I think that we can actually change the reality for a lot of kids and a lot of families and a lot of parents. But we can only do it if we're actually willing to re-examine what we're doing and actually focus on learning and actually support staff to do that as well. Do please contact me if you're interested. I know some of you have, and some of you I hope will continue to do. That's my Twitter handle. I bear no responsibility for that at all. It was given to me years ago, but it's stuck, and that's what everybody knows me. If I Must is not my surname. And this is what I'm going to leave you with. We said this a few years ago, and I still believe it. Schools need to place parental engagement at the centre rather than at the periphery of what they do. Go back and look at your teaching and learning policy. Where are parents in your teaching and learning policy? If they're an add-on extra at the end, it's not going to work. It's got to be at the very heart. Parental engagement in children's learning makes a difference. It's the most powerful lever for school improvement that we have. Thank you very much.